tired of this guy, and I am not kidding you, this guy, Solomon. I mean, he looks a little goofy now to me after I've considered all of his frivolity. I'm still going to finish chapter two because I said I was going to, and then we're going to move on. But this is a great lesson here because I think success can be extremely boring. I think personally, this is me. Maybe you have this affliction. I consider it one almost, but it might be a blessing in disguise. Is that I think that I might be afraid of success. I think that I would be concerned that success would change things and ruin me. That I would look around at my success or my accumulation of wealth or whatever, and I would have the horrifying discovery that it's all vanity. See, so maybe this comes from having read Solomon before. Maybe this comes because I've read Ecclesiastes over and over again. It's an amazing book, and that I actually learned something from it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another week. We're launching here on another week of the Revelation series, looking, trying to keep you from thinking that success is the answer, because you're going to be sorely tempted. Many of you, those of you looking over the shoulders of the folks I'm talking to who, you're not in the body of Christ, and you're really debating whether or not you want to get all this great wisdom and knowledge, because you might get pain and things might go harder for you. You might get out of step with your friends. You might be rejected by your church. Oh, you will be, I mean. That's what I meant to say. You will be rejected by your church. And what's the use of it? The use of it is that you will be spared the coming indignation, where you will find, definitely discover, that this earth is sinking, the world is sinking, the system is sinking. What people think are important is disappearing into thin air, vaporizing, even now before our very eyes, as the chiefs of this eon, as Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, are being discarded. So I think I'm actually afraid of success, and I think that's good. So maybe sometimes I may even sabotage myself on purpose, but subconsciously a little bit, because I can't believe that I'm really this way. Let me give you an example. Maybe you can relate to this. Well, maybe you can't relate to writing a novel, but you can relate to it in some other endeavor in your life. I wrote two great novels. The second one, I think, is a miracle. It's a masterpiece, a work of art. So what I do now, I wrote it years ago. So what I'm supposed to do now is pitch it to various agents. And the agents will then either say yay or nay. If an agent likes it, I don't pitch the whole novel. I give them an idea of it. I give them a sample of my writing. And then if they like it, then they will pitch it to mainstream publishers. And then I, Martin Zender, would become a mainstream published writer. And I would be lauded and feted. And I would probably be awarded the Nobel Prize, the Pulitzer. And life would be different for me. And I wouldn't like it. It would be an honor at first, and I think, oh, the Pulitzer. Well, okay, if I must, I must. But then I think that it would be a major hassle, honestly. I think that success would be a major hassle. I think that people who are successful have beset themselves with all sorts of problems, and I see this in Solomon, and I think that what we think would be the best thing for us. You know, when you were a kid, when you were little, you prayed for stuff. Jesus, please let me get a good grade in that test, or please don't let mom discover that I, you know, slept outside in a snowbank when I wasn't allowed to. You're wondering where that came from? I actually wanted to do that one time. Yeah, there was, you know how the snow plow pushes this giant snow in piles? Well, in my neighborhood, the snow plow came, scraped the snow in a giant pile. I built an igloo in it. I'd go in there, put a little carpet in there, and had a radio antenna sticking out of it, and I wanted to sleep in there for the night. And my mom said, no, Martin, you may not sleep in there tonight. I said, okay, mommy. So then after she went to bed, I put on all my winter clothes, and I was ready to sneak out of the house, creeping like a mouse. But she discovered me. Where are you going? Well, I'm going to, I was just going to go shovel the driveway for Daddy. Shovel the sidewalk or the driveway, whatever. What did I say? The drive? I don't know. I was nervous because it was a lie. I generally didn't lie. I can't. I'm like George Washington. if I even try to bend the truth a little bit, I just start weeping. It's okay, Mommy, I was going to go into the snowdrift. And so she kept me from it because she was wise. So we think we know what we want. Our parents keep us from stuff. And even today we say, oh, we want to be successful. We want to make lots of money. And we want that perfect job, the perfect spouse, the perfect car. And God says, no, no, and no. And so if we had just learned this lesson from Solomon that I'm detailing for you in the first two chapters of Ecclesiastes, we wouldn't even want these things. Or we might want them, but we would always end all of our requests to God with, not my will, but thine be done. And I recommend using the King James terminology there if you're praying that prayer. Because God is like, whoa, this guy's going King James on me. Not my will, but thine be done. And God really takes notice when you use 1611 English. So yeah, I recommend that highly. Thine, and do put the accent on it, but make it a little Shakespearean, like, not my will, but thine be done. A hand gesture works well. Of course, sweeping, starting at the ear, sweeping down toward the chest, and then up, up, up to the heavens. Not my will, but thine be done. And then God will acquiesce to your request, and he will not grant you many of the things that you think you want. But see, I am circumnavigating that route by assuming that I would screw up my own life by being successful. So what I do is I don't push as hard as I should. I should be sending 10 agent queries out a day. A query is the little paragraph you send them telling them why your novel is great, why you are great, and giving them a choice little tidbit of how great of a writer you are. And then, see, I just don't, I should be doing this constantly, but I just don't. I'll get around to it. The fact is, I've written the novel, and to me, the joy is in accomplishing that. I don't need the accolades of the world. As of now, I have probably 11 completed books in my computer that I haven't gotten around to making into books, but I've finally assigned that task of typesetting books, making them look pretty, to my friend in Tennessee. And he is going to do this for me, so that's why these books are finally going to get out that I've been talking about. Because there's a pride attached to holding one of your books. This isn't one of my books. This is actually, I'm showing you the cover of the Woodstock DVD. The famous film made from the Woodstock concert in New York in 1969. But this, pretend like this is one of my books. It's wonderful pride to hold a book. You kind of smell it, kiss it. It's got your name on it, and you wrote it, and it's like, I wrote a book. Mm. So I love writing them, but publishing them is a hassle to me. But the thing is, I'm robbing you of this information, so I must rise above my own stupidity, my own resistance to success, failure, and knowledge, success and pride, I guess, and just go for it. Get puffed up. Watch my books accumulate, and just get puffed up and watch God pop my little bubble. That's what I'm going to do. So anyway, no, don't be lured by the success is happiness thing. True success, and God does not measure success as the world measures success. True success is embracing the truth of God and becoming peaceful and becoming quiet in the knowledge that God is your Father and that he is bringing you into great riches, but the riches of the celestial realms, not the little trinkets on the earth. So, speaking of trinkets on the earth, verse 8, Ecclesiastes 2, Solomon collected also silver and gold, the valuable treasures of kings and provinces. I provided male singers and female singers for myself. I knew it. I told you this last week. He invented rap music back then. He had everything. And he provided male singers and female singers for himself. So he had Kanye West. And he had Madonna and Beyonce. And that era's equivalent of Madonna and Beyonce. And Lady Gaga, naturally. And with the rich delights of the sons of humanity, a wine waiter and wine waitresses. This is perfect. If you're going to experiment, and I alluded to this possibility on Friday, if you're going to experiment with wine, if you're going to experiment with raving while maintaining your wisdom, here is evidence that Solomon maintained his wisdom because he assigned for himself wine waiters and wine waitresses. Wait a minute. wait a minute. Look at the specific wording here of this. This is from the Concordant version of the Old Testament. And here we get insight into Solomon. A wine waiter and wine waitresses he provided for himself. He has male singers and female singers. So he has more than one male singer, more than one female singer. We seem to see a little bit of an equality there. But yet when it comes to bringing him wine, he has a wine waiter and wine waitresses. That's my boy. Verse 9. As I grew greater and added more than anyone who was over Jerusalem before me, indeed, my wisdom, it stayed with me. This is singular. But I think this happens with us too, because it's just like the Spirit of God. The Spirit of God stays with you. Once it's in you, it stays with you. You cannot lose it. So even as we conduct our little experiments into wine waitresses and fruit trees and herds and flocks, even as we do that and we find out that, hey, we're successful, and hey, success isn't all it's cracked up to be, hey, we gained this, hey, we just lost it, we retain the Spirit of God. It never leaves us. Likewise, I think this wisdom that comes to us from Paul does not leave us. Now, Solomon maintained his wisdom, which is odd when we remember that Solomon was led astray eventually, not by his wine waitresses. No, they were true to him always, and they served the true God. I'm assuming, I like to say that. But the concubines, no, even they, now even the concubines towed the line, towed the sexual line of raving. They stayed true to the true God, I like to think. But it's the wives, Solomon's wives, and he had 1,000 of them, or maybe only, he might have only had 500. I don't know if the term we often hear, Solomon had 1,000 of this, is that wine's wives. I got wine on the brain. Is that wives and concubines, or is that just the wives, meaning that he possibly had 2,000 total wives and concubines? Not sure. I'm going to ask him next time I see him. But anyway, it's his wives that led him to the worship of foreign deities. And I'm wondering if he still said he maintained his wisdom. It's possible only in this way that Solomon was wise enough to know that he was an experiment. He was a display of what happens when people are successful. Maybe he knew that this was his role. And so even while he knows he's going astray into the observance of the elements of worshiping false deities, even while that's happening, he knows that God is doing this to him on purpose so that people, he can write about it later and read about it. So therefore, his wisdom is intact above the, quote, losing of his wisdom as he goes astray. I don't recommend this. Don't try this at home, people. This is a dangerous course. God isn't doing this anymore. We don't need this experiment conducted anymore. Don't do this. You are not going to become a modern-day example of this. So don't even try to embark upon a Solomonic excursion of fleshly and winely delights. It's been done. Been there, done that. You don't need to do it. Well, how much time do I have left? I'm getting into some good stuff here. I grew greater. Indeed, my wisdom stayed with me. That's key. And all that my eyes asked for, I did not deny to them. I did not withhold my heart from any rejoicing. Let it come. Whatever pleasure there was, let it come. And this itself was my portion from all my toil. He worked for it. This was his wage. Yet when I faced all my deeds that my hands had done, and the toil that I had toiled in doing them, behold, the whole was vanity and a grazing on wind, and there was nothing of advantage under the sun. Wow. So got to pick up with verse 12. Got to finish this. Thought I was going to do it today. Sorry. Nothing of advantage under the sun. So actually, the only advantage that came of this excursion of his was to us. We have the advantage in that Solomon is going to save us great pains if we can attend to his wisdom, and if we can resist the temptations to power, to money, to success. Not that success is wrong, or power or money, but let us give ourselves over to God that these things may come to us in measure. Don't worry, even if they come to you in abundance, you're not going to lose your wisdom. You're not going to lose this Spirit of God. But as Paul says, we use the world, but we don't use it up. Solomon used it up. He drank every drag of pleasure that was to be had. This is not for us. Thank God, because we are even wiser than Solomon. Yes, it's true. I won't. You didn't like me saying that. No, I'm going to maintain that. You're not going to listen. I'm going to maintain that we are wiser than Solomon. We have definitely more knowledge. We have more information about God. We have a clearer. We're going to see that by a verse I read to you tomorrow. We have a clearer understanding of God because God revealed himself through Jesus Christ. And Paul and God revealed the grace he has and has had in himself, not only through Jesus Christ, but especially as Jesus Christ gives it to the Apostle Paul when he apprehends that sinner on the road to Damascus. We've all been down our roads of Damascus. We've been harrowed. We've been brought low. And yet God picks us up, raises us up, gives us every blessing among the celestials in Christ. And now we are to walk worthy of that calling.